VOA Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Rick Pantaleo, broadcaster and producer with VOA's Current Affairs Desk. Rick is also the host of the science edition of Press Conference USA and VOA's daily Science in a Minute feature. On this edition of the program, Amy Webb, author, futurist, and founder of Future Today Institute, joins us for our annual conversation about the future of technology and its implications for business, society, and politics. Future Today Institute is a leading future forecasting firm now in its second decade. Founded by Amy Webb in 2006, Future Today Institute focuses exclusively on how emerging technology and science will disrupt business, transform the workforce, and ignite geopolitical change. It uses data-driven research to model and prototype the future. Amy Webb is the author of several books, including The Signals Are Talking, Why Today's Fringe is Tomorrow's Mainstream, which explains how to forecast and manage technological change. Her best-selling memoir, Data, A Love Story, which, by the way, I read and thoroughly enjoyed, is about finding love via algorithms. Data is being adapted as a feature film, which is currently in production. Her upcoming book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Will Change Humanity, launches on March 5th, 2019. It's a call to arms about the broken nature of artificial intelligence and the powerful corporations that are turning the human-machine relationship on its head. In addition, for over 15 years, Amy has been dedicated to helping inform and shape the future of journalism. We'll talk with Amy about the latest trends in technology and geopolitics for 2019 and beyond, and how foreign adversaries and their witting or unwitting accomplices have exploited social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to disseminate false news and advertisements, and what can be done to curb this trend, which some argue threatens the integrity of our democracy. And Amy Webb joins us by phone from her office at Future Today Institute. Amy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you again this year.
And, of course, I'm always delighted to welcome my colleague, Rick Pantaleo.
Thank you.
And he gets the first question.
Amy, I'm curious. Before we look forward to 2019, let's look back at 2018. As far as your trends for 2018, which ones came through and which ones were you disappointed that didn't come through?
Sure. I just want to clarify that as a futurist, I don't make predictions, and that's in part because of math. There are too many variables at play, whether we're talking about science and technology or politics or geopolitics or the global economy. So my job is not to make predictions, but rather to use data to model out weak signals, emerging trends, and then plausible scenarios for the future. So with that in mind, every year we put together a huge report that just sort of explains all of the trends that are on our horizon. And last year that report had around 275 or so emerging trends. And I would say that all of those trends that we identified were very much in play throughout 2018 and will continue to be in play throughout 2019. And some of those have to do with, for example, mobile devices and how we're using mobile phones, but also peripherals like smart fitness bands, you know, and even smart rings, but also things like geopolitical decisions that intersect with technology, science, and regulation. So we started to see some serious changes all around the world in the wake of the GDPR regulations that went into effect in Europe. We even saw different versions of the internet start to emerge outside of places like Russia and China, where the internet is very much under the control of the government.
Amy, you brought up a couple of items that I'm curious about, and that's smart devices and wearables. When you say smart yoga pants, for example, or smart glasses, what are we talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about flexible fabrics or plastics that have sensors in them that are connected to the cloud or connected to a tiny computer that you wear that collect and use the data that you're generating simply by virtue of the fact that you're wearing that device, and then provide some kind of computational feedback to you. So there's a lot of performance wear. So, example, connected yoga pants. This gives you a sense of your lactic acid threshold, how well you're moving your body, whether or not you've got your legs in exactly the right place. Yoga, unlike running, for example, is slower. And also there's a need to make sure that the form is right as you're slowly moving into different poses. So that's feedback that enables the user, the wearer, I guess, in real time to make adjustments without a teacher standing nearby.
So, Amy, what do you see are the most striking trends in technology and geopolitics developing as we enter 2019, both troubling and promising trends?
Yeah, I think 2019 is going to be an interesting year for many reasons. For anybody who's interested in tracking the future, you really have to pay attention to what's happened in the past. And from that vantage point, 2018 has been a pivotal year because of decisions made and decisions that were not made. And so all around the world, leaders have started to change and shape the alliances that they have. We've seen the emergence of new policies that involve citizens, but also technology and science. And I think in 2019, we're going to start to see how a lot of this shakes out. So, for example, toward the end of 2018, we started hearing about experimentation in China on human embryos using genetic editing. So CRISPR was the technique that was used, and there was a pair of twins born who supposedly had been edited so that they are more resistant to the HIV virus. Now, that announcement was made at a very well-known conference for scientists, but it wasn't peer-reviewed. And I think it took a lot of the world by storm, and a lot of people were shocked. Usually events like that, whether or not they were true, whether or not the twins were successfully edited, what tends to happen afterward is a call for regulation, a call for norms and standards, you know, and there's a sort of collective freakout. You could also argue that this was not the first time that gene editing has been used in a more aggressive way. And China was certainly not the first country to sort of veer into this space, but the news nonetheless was very shocking. So, you know, probably what we will see going forward with a lot of critical technologies like those in the biological space, but also when it comes to artificial intelligence, autonomy, what's happening to the airspace overhead, cryptocurrencies, blockchains, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think those technologies are starting to intersect with global affairs and everyday people, and also geoeconomics and geopolitics in ways that may make a lot of people feel very uncomfortable. So what I would say going into 2019 is, in addition to mapping all the usual suspects like microsatellites, because we know there's thousands of them launching in the coming year, and 5G, which will start to roll out in a meaningful way over the coming year, and a lot of voice interfaces and bio interfaces rather than simply typing on keyboards, and even things like esports and mixed reality, which will start to change how and where we see our content, to things like home automation and more of our appliances and devices making decisions on our behalf. In addition to all of these technologies, we have to also pay attention in the coming year to how our governments are approaching those technologies and whether they're doing that with foresight or they are doing so in a reactive mode. Because the decisions that are made about whether to regulate or to set global norms and standards or whatever it might be, are going to have long-term reverberations that we ought to be thinking through right now.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Amy Webb, founder and CEO of Future Today Institute, and that's a leading future forecasting firm. She's the author of the forthcoming book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Will Change Humanity. And I'm Carol Castiel, along with Rick Pantaleo. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find that on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a big shout out in the new year to Shimi Johnson from Kanyakumari, India. Thanks for writing in. If you want to hear your name on the air, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest, Amy Webb. Amy, I want to continue our conversation very briefly on the geopolitical front, because you mentioned China and you talked about how China is making sweeping decisions about climate science, diplomacy throughout Africa, Southeast Asia, and even Latin America, how to manage its population. You also mentioned the trade war that we saw ignited in 2018 by President Donald Trump. Do you see this trade war escalating or ending in 2019?
That's a great question, and I think if I had the exact answer to that question, that would be the greatest gift I could give anybody going into the new year. I don't know, and that's one of the characteristics, again, I think that's going to make 2019 a bit more difficult to do planning around because we're facing a lot of uncertainty. What we know for sure is that this trade war is not good for anybody involved. And unfortunately, sometimes heightened rhetoric leads to anxiety and duress. And nobody should ever make decisions when they are under duress. There's a wonderful old proverb that goes something like, don't make a decision when you're being chased by a tiger. And
excellent.
Challenges when we have great uncertainty, like what's going to happen with the price of soybeans, whether or not we can even sell them, that starts to have a sort of ricocheting effect around other industry sectors. So I don't know. What I can tell you is that we in the United States, and I think other Western democracies around the world, need to start treating China very differently. Unfortunately, too many people that I interact with still view China as a society that's very good at like copying and pasting, but not good at innovation. And I think if you look at some of the policy that's coming out of Beijing, you would be hard-pressed not to see innovation there or not to see some of the changes that have come into place as being both creative but also far-reaching. So I'm very concerned about the seriousness with which we are treating, at least from the United States, the way that we're treating China and the way that a lot of Western nations around the world are treating China as well. I think we may regret some of our decisions later on.
Amy, you brought up something a few minutes ago that I've been very curious about. I've been hearing many, many things about it, and that's 5G network technology. I understand this has the potential of being a real game changer.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in Japan when there was sort of a similar decision being made around CDMA and a different standard at that time. So most of the industrialized world has fourth generation infrastructure and connectivity. So 5G is the fifth generation of it. And I think there's been a lot of excitement. China has certainly moved far ahead. We had a trial not too long ago in Hawaii that did not go well. And Japan is working feverishly to roll out its version of the infrastructure ahead of the 2020 Olympics. You know, it depends on who you talk to. Some of the wireless carriers don't see 5G as a critical stepping stone in their futures. Do consumers need really to have that much more bandwidth, right, is one of the questions. It would also require changing a lot of business models. If we have lightning fast access and we're able to pull significantly more information and data down very quickly, that disrupts the business model, at least in the United States and other places like the UK, that currently exist. There are also some questions around additional connectivity. So if we're moving into fully connected homes, for example, where we don't have a few computers, maybe a television set that are pulling data, a situation in which our refrigerators are connected, and our garages, and our cameras that unlock the front door, like all of these different things. That changes things a little bit, as does the specter of autonomous vehicles, which to some extent will need less latency, even if the future of autonomous driving, at least in the United States, looks more like a vehicle-to-vehicle versus vehicle-to-infrastructure setup. We're still going to need less latency, greater connectivity, but we haven't seen a lot of movement, and I think the fact that China is pushing ahead, or at least talking very seriously about pushing ahead, will start to force the hand of regulators and network operators in the United States and elsewhere.
Amy, I guess one of the reasons why I brought the 5G technology up is that it appears that it will be used more than using on a smartphone. In other words, even cable industry is embracing 5G technology for use in the home.
Right. So again, like it's the fifth generation of the technology. If you were to go back to 3G, for example, you know, one generation ago from where we're at right now, or even, you know, before that, connectivity was much slower. You could not have done FaceTime, you know, or Skype or any other video chatting on those other networks. And if what we're talking about is spatial computing, you know, wearable devices that collect and distribute ambient data as we're wearing them, then yeah, you're going to need wireless infrastructure that is significantly more robust than it is today. That being said, I don't think that the network operators have quite figured out what the future of that business model looks like at scale.
Amy, as you know, I always like to bring us back to social media platforms and the abuse thereof. At the end of 2018, a report was released that provided the most sweeping analysis yet of the magnitude and impact of Russia's disinformation campaign around the 2016 election. It found the operation used every major social media platform to deliver words, images, and videos tailored to voters interested in helping elect President Trump and worked harder to support him in office. Conversely, these posts tried to sap political clout from left-leaning African-American voters, undermining their faith in elections, spreading misleading information about how to vote. So, Amy, the question to you is, these findings, you know, underscored the double-edged sword that social media has become. It once was used to rally people around positive causes. Remember the Arab Spring, democracy activists fighting these autocracies. And now they're being weaponized by Russians and their accomplices to spread disinformation that's infecting and obviously undermining our democracy. What are your thoughts about the role of social media, and do their business models simply militate against combating the use of their platforms for nefarious purposes? Where do we stand now?
Right. So this is an ongoing thorny problem, because you could argue, on the one hand, to impose any restrictions or to impose any regulations would be tantamount to restricting free speech. And free speech is one of the tenets of a functioning democracy. But free speech, not unlike technology, can be repurposed for bad end goals. And that seems to be what's happened. I think there's a few things going on. One of the challenges that we're having is that the platforms have not been collaborative or forthcoming when asked by not just government agencies, but everyday people about what exactly is happening with their data and who has access to it. That's where I think a lot of the global anger came from in the wake of the Cambridge Analytica scandal that erupted early in 2018. However, at the end of 2018, it was revealed that Facebook itself was not the only funnel through which Russian intelligence officers were feeding information to voters around the world, but Instagram as well. Facebook had plenty of opportunities to let folks know, and certainly Instagram users know, that the platform had been used as well, and they just left that part out of the conversation. So this is where I'm coming back to one of the key trends and probably one of the key themes of 2019, especially in the United States, because the Democrats have taken back the House, is regulation. I think that for a very long time, some of the big tech giants have escaped the regulatory eye of Washington, D.C., in part because Washington, D.C. has been focused on other things. And I'm not saying that regulation is the best way forward. In fact, I think regulation would be far more problematic, but if everybody fails to come to the table in a meaningful way and work on a better path to the future and demonstrate that they're actually making serious and significant changes, then regulation is what's at the end of this dark, dark tunnel. There's no way of getting around that. So from my vantage point, there's still plenty of money to be made, and cleaning up the algorithms, coming up with better workflow processes, being very introspective and figuring out what is doing long-term damage to democracy, and then coming up with some reasonable solutions that have some teeth, you know, that can be actually enforced. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, I could go on and on. Instagram, although Instagram is owned by Facebook. These companies right now have an opportunity to create meaningful policy and to make meaningful changes and to demonstrate that they're serious about preserving our democratic ideals. And if they can do that while still earning a profit, because these are for-profit companies and they also have obligations not just to Washington, D.C., but to their shareholders. But if they keep not doing that, this is where we're all going to wind up having some very uncomfortable conversations at some point in 2019, which I think does nobody any good, again, because you don't want to wait till a crisis to come up with a meaningful solution under duress.
Indeed. A quick comment before I turn to my colleague, Rick. You use the word introspective, which doesn't, let's put it this way, that's not the word that comes to mind when I think about Mark Zuckerberg.
They need to have a come-to-Jesus moment, but I don't know how that's going to translate worldwide because it's kind of American slang.
Very briefly, because we're running out of time, but I think, you know, free speech is all well and good, but we have to know when free speech ends and incitement, hate speech, begins. And that's what we saw last year. Perpetrators of hate crimes were incited, you know, by hate speech and conspiracy theories that were being circulated on social media. And I do believe that Facebook, these CEOs of Facebook, Twitter, and so forth, need to take responsibility because that hate speech results in crimes and violence and death. We saw the gunning down of innocent Jews in a synagogue in Pittsburgh last year by someone who was incited by Facebook posts. So again, I think this is something serious to consider in 2019. But with that, I've got to turn over to my colleague, Rick.
Amy, I noticed one of the trends you're looking at going into 2019 is the convergence of technologies such as AI, genomics, and quantum computing and encryption. What do you mean about convergence of technologies, one complementing the other?
Yeah, so another way to think about this is that they, in a lot of ways, sit in adjacent spaces but have complementary throughputs so that advances in something like machine learning could cause an acceleration of advancements in spaces like bioengineering. So to me, one of the very interesting places to look for what feels like sudden change later on is if you track changes across these different spaces like AI and quantum, although quantum I think is still further way out. You know, oftentimes advancements in one space leads to advancements in the next space, and there's a sort of ladder effect almost. So we could start seeing some really interesting improvements in health and medical science over the next year or two, as well as in things like autonomous decision making, but not just in vehicles, you know, like cars, but, you know, also things like tiny robots that do other types of jobs for us to make our lives a little bit easier. But to Carol's excellent point earlier, sometimes these advancements lead to negative results. So I guess the thing that I would close on is this. Ultimately, you can't separate technology from democracy, from governing, from the levers of our economies, and from society itself. And that is not new. That is the way that things have always been. So we as individuals, as well as the people who run our various governments around the world, we have to start confronting some truths that may be very uncomfortable. And we have to start making decisions that might make us a little uncomfortable in the present, but which will pay dividends in the future. And that could be something as simple as, if it makes you uncomfortable that Facebook enabled mass violence and attacks in the United States, but also, you know, elsewhere in the world, then maybe the answer is just go back to emailing people. Don't use Facebook anymore. If you're living in a country where Facebook is the platform that's cheapest and easiest to use, or maybe Facebook's even providing the wireless infrastructure, then that's a harder decision to make. But we have to start holding ourselves accountable, our government leaders accountable, and the technology providers have to start thinking through the implications of their actions. And we all have to do this together because the rate of change is accelerating and our problems are becoming much more complicated than they were in the past. So my outlook for 2019 is not necessarily bad. I still believe that we have some agency in what's coming and that we are in control of our own destinies, but we have to start confronting those uncertainties now and making some decisions for our future selves that may feel a little difficult or uncomfortable in the present.
Amy, before we close, any other trends you want to signal or to highlight for geopolitics? You know, Russia will probably continue its efforts to influence democracies with its nefarious, underhanded practices, China dominance, and so forth. And, of course, one other thing. Do you think that the U.K. will eventually leave the EU? I mean, they may possibly do another referendum. I'm just curious.
So here's what I would say. There are things that you can predict when you have discrete variables. So you could probably, if you had the right people, the right mix of people, and you ask them the question the right way, you could probably get some sense of the likelihood of the referendum changing or not changing in the UK, which would give you some sense of whether or not they'll leave or stay. But I think one of the great challenges we all have going forward is that, like it or not, we're all very interconnected. So the decisions made by one leader at one moment in time really do have significant effects, whether or not they realize it at the time. I would say that, you know, one of the trends that I hope to see going forward, I haven't seen it yet, but I hope to see, is collaboration at a scale that hasn't existed before. We're going to need our global leaders to come to the table, again, showing courageous leadership, who are willing to make significant collaborations and inroads on game-changing technologies that also intersect with citizens and policy. So I'm talking about stuff like AI, but also small satellites and networks of satellites that get launched. I'm talking about activities on the moon, global infrastructure like 5G, which doesn't just exist in one country, but exists in many countries. Transportation, if we start having autonomous vehicles that don't just drive on the ground, but also potentially fly overhead, we have to think about how the airspace gets regulated in different ways. These are all really complicated, long-term issues that are going to require meaningful collaboration between our leaders. And the outputs of those collaborations may not truly be felt while that person is still in office. I'm hoping that that collaboration, I haven't seen it yet for 2019. It's on my wish list for 2020 and beyond.
Before we close, Amy, just a quick preview of your forthcoming book, The Big Nine, How the Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Will Change Humanity.
My new book is all about the future of AI, and essentially there are 9 big technology companies that are building our future, 6 in the United States, 3 in China. The United States side include Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Facebook, IBM, and Apple. And in China, it's the Bat, Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. And it's these 9 companies who really do control much of what our futures look like, because our futures all are tethered to the third era of computing, and essentially that is AI. The challenge is that in the United States, the companies are sort of doing their own thing. They have to answer to 2 masters, Wall Street and Washington, D.C., and for anybody who's got divorced parents, they understand how challenging it can be when the parents don't always agree. In the United States, however, although Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent technically are independent companies, they are very much under the thumb of Beijing, where President Xi Jinping and the CCP have changed some regulations and started to consolidate power. So my concern is where we go from here, what AI is being optimized for, how our data is being used, and what all of that implies for the future. Ultimately, the book is a blueprint and a roadmap with tactical and strategic solutions. But before you get to that last chapter where all of that is explained, the center part of the book are scenarios that outline optimistic, pragmatic, and truly catastrophic framings for what might happen from here. And my goal is to change the developmental track. So this book was written for everybody. It's being translated into multiple languages. It's being sold all over the world. And I hope in March folks take some time to read through it, and then they start to implement what's in that last chapter of the book.
And we'd love to have you back once the book is published to talk about it, Amy.
That'd be great.
Amy Webb is the founder and CEO of the Future Today Institute. Amy Webb, once again, thanks so much for your time and for your wonderful insights.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on The Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites, and joining me on the program was Rick Pantaleo, host of the science edition of Press Conference USA and VOA's Daily Science in a Minute feature. I'm Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.